Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh!
Let him play!
He wins. Great steak. Smells like poop.
Honestly, like, if Urban Meyer wants to come to Connecticut, bring him on. I mean, come on. I'll take him, too.
Nia Jackson, I think, weighs 280 pounds.
Oh!
Can we isolate that clip? Nia Jackson weighs 280 pounds.
Oh!
Let her play.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big draft show. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios in sunny Southern California. Tomorrow is the NFL draft coming to us from Nashville, Tennessee. Tonight is the NFL draft preview coming to you from somewhere in the Los Angeles area. And I'm here to share that with you with our great NFL draft expert, Ron in New Jersey, who joins us in a matter of seconds to break it all down. And I also want to thank Chris and Georgia for a good show last night with the NBA report. And I want to thank you guys for continuing to listen to the program. We've been doing some best of specials commemorating top five episodes of each year of this program's operation, going all the way back to 2009. And the latest one is the best top five episodes of 2012 from the DidCal archives. And I think it's, it does feel a little self-indulgent, but at the same time, it's always fun to look back at some of the best moments of the show. And, you know, we've got some pretty good moments coming up, too, in the months ahead. You know, next month we'll have the best of 2013, 2014, 15, 16, 17, and so on. So it's going to be a pretty good time. So I look forward to continuing to produce those shows. I try to do them as far in advance as I can, so I just make sure that we get everything in. But I hope you're enjoying those best of retrospectives. But now we get into the present and we get into a draft that's a little bit different than usual, but still a lot of very interesting prospects for teams across the league. Just maybe not the pizzazz that you might be used to. Still, tremendous opportunity for a lot of teams in the NFL to get better. Let's do it. Time for the NFL draft preview. The 2019 edition, and the NFL draft rolls its way into its ongoing tour, having started going to other cities, and an interesting choice this year with Nashville. I would say they're a football town. I don't know how to really evaluate their NFL fandom, because I've seen some of those those Tennessee Titans games, and you're not really getting a lot of guys there, but. On the other hand, the Titans aren't very good, so you know I can't really use that as a barometer. So anyway, let's get our co-host on the program tonight to break it all down, and that's Ron in New Jersey. Good to have you back, Ron. How's it going tonight?
Good, Dave. How are you?
Pretty good. You know, it's late April, the playoffs in full form, and the NFL draft is just around the corner. And I know you've been really keying in on a lot of the up and comers coming out of college. And, you know, we both follow college football as well, along with the rest of the Football Picks panel. So it's always good. It's kind of like a graduation for a lot of these guys. So it's very neat to see the transition from what they do in college into what they do in the pros. So what are your opening thoughts in terms of the draft this year? You know, like I said, Nashville is a very interesting choice for a city. It's not the biggest NFL market at all, but I know the people there love football. So, you know, let me get your thoughts on what's to come. And you know what to look forward to, especially with Kyler Murray, as I'm sure he's the biggest name in the draft so far.
Yeah, you know, to start with Nashville, I guess I always I see Nashville almost like a mini New Orleans, in that you know it's a party city, and it's mostly outdoors. Beale Street and all that stuff, or that's Memphis, but wherever Nashville seems like a party city, you know, they got all the barbecue joints there and, you know, a lot of events are moving there now. But I was watching it before, and I'm not sure if the weather's going to hold up there this weekend. I know a lot of the NFL stuff that they do with the draft now that they made it sort of a traveling event is outdoors. So hopefully they get some nice weather because, you know, the past couple of years, the turnouts in Chicago, Dallas, Philadelphia, it's been pretty cool on TV to see the amount of fans who show up there. And, you know, it's just another example of how the NFL is king. I mean, you take an event where, you know, people are college kids are getting picked to, you know, NFL teams, and it's become, you know, almost as big as a sporting, you know, as an NFL game or a championship game, something like that. You have all these fans traveling from all over the country and descending, you know, on the host city for a good 3 or 4 days. And I mean, you have these cities bidding, you know, bidding for it now. It's just crazy to think, you know, 15, 20 years ago, it was in Radio City Music Hall, and, you know, it didn't look like it was going to move from there ever. And now it's almost as big an event as almost, you know, like WrestleMania was a couple of weeks ago, where, you know, the city itself benefits so much from hosting, the draft. It's crazy to think about, in terms of, I guess what the big overall story going into this draft is like you said, Dave, it's where Kyler Murray is going to go. And if he, in fact, is going to get picked number one by the Arizona Cardinals just a year after they traded up and picked Josh Rosen to be their quarterback of the future, it's, you know, I think it's unprecedented that a team would pick a quarterback 2 years in a row in the first round. But by all indications, I mean, it's a pretty good possibility that's going to happen this year. And, you know, the next move after that is, or, you know, the move coming before that is, where's Josh Rosen going to go? And, can they find somebody to trade him to, that'll match the compensation that they want? And if they don't, I mean, do you stick with Rosen and pick someone else besides Murray? And if that happens, I mean, I think it's going to throw the draft in the chaos.
Yeah, I'm really finding that decision, that potential decision, curious, because, you know, we don't know anything about Murray yet, and I know we really don't know a whole lot about Rosen either, but it just seems like a very odd thing to do, to take a gamble on Murray this high in the draft. And you know, if I were to be asked, where did you think he would be drafted before I heard the rumblings about the Cardinals trying to trade away Rosen in order to get him, I was thinking, maybe he'd end up mid first round, maybe late first round, or even the second round. It's very surprising to me that they would consider this. And I'll be honest with you, Mike. I mean, why did I say call you Mike? Well, I'll be honest with you, Ron. That would be a mistake. I really think that would be a big mistake doing that. Because, number one, there's no assurance that he's going to get the protection. He's a small guy. I would be very surprised if he were to work in that system. Number two, we just don't. Again, I feel like they're trying to capture the magic of what Pat Mahomes did last year for Kansas City, but I don't think he's as good. I mean, I don't know what you think, but do you think this would be a mistake if they actually followed through with that plan?
It's very odd if they follow through with it. I think it has a disaster written all over it. I do also think that there's a small chance that it could be a genius move, but I think when you take a look at Kyler Murray, you know, the people who are pro Kyler Murray look at him in the same mold as Russell Wilson, right? I mean, they're both small guys who improvise, you know, when the pressure gets in the pocket, and they make their own plays and are winners. The only problem with that is that Russell Wilson did it for you know, 4 years in college at, you know, Wisconsin and NC State. And Kyler Murray was a baseball player, really, up until this past season. So he has 1 year under his belt, and it was a good year, and you know, he put up big numbers. But to mortgage your future a year after using so much draft capital to move up and take Josh Rosen, who, you know, let's be honest, he wasn't good last year, but you also have to take into account that they probably had the worst NFL situation of any team in the past decade. I mean, they had an offensive coordinator who was fired within the first month. Their coach was fired after the first year. Their skill position players was, you know, an old Larry Fitzgerald and really nobody else. Yeah, teams stacking the box to stop David Johnson. It was just a mess. And Rosen flashed at times last year. I just don't see how you could give up on someone with his ability a year after you mortgage your future to take him, to go ahead the next year and give up on him and sell him for, you know, 60 cents on the dollar just so you can draft a small athlete who has 1 year of college football experience under his belt. It just, like I said, it screams disaster to me. You know, I'm sure there's, and just like everything in sports, there's always that small chance that, you know, it defies the odds and it'll work out. But I don't see the point of it. Like you said, Dave, up until, you know, Cliff Kingsbury was hired to be the Arizona Cardinals coach, the talk was Kyler Murray being a second or third round pick. And now, you know, because they have a history and, you know, Kingsbury loves him, he's suddenly the number one overall pick in the draft. And to me, it just doesn't make sense.
No, I think where a lot of people are at with that possibility. Staying on the topic of quarterbacks, the quarterback class is going to be a pretty significant step down from what we had last year. But that's not a knock on this class necessarily. I mean, it is, but it's not really, because last year, Darnold got drafted. We mentioned Rosen. Baker Mayfield just transformed the Browns. And Pat Mahomes just lit up the NFL on fire, especially in fantasy football. So, I mean, that was a great draft class for quarterbacks. This year, you've got Murray. You have Dwayne Haskins from Ohio State. Drew Lock from Missouri. Daniel Jones from Duke. And Will Greer. Probably the most, exciting of those guys. I don't know. Maybe Murray is, and Greer is from West Virginia. But comparing the two draft class, the two quarterback classes, I mean, what would you say about this year's quarterback class, Rod?
Oh, I don't think it holds a candle to last year's. I think it's a really subpar group this year. It reminds me of the year when Ryan Tannehill came out and Blake Bortles, and you had a bunch of guys getting overdrafted who anybody who watches college football could have told you that these guys are not good and we're going to be a failure, and that's what happened. And that's the way I see this class. I mean, Dwayne Haskins, I think, has, you know, pretty good pro potential. The one knock on him is, and if you watch enough Ohio State games, you could see it. The guy is like, he excelled because Ohio State was so superior to their opponents that he could sit back in the pocket and, you know, pick apart defenses. But when there's pressure on him, he is, I guess the closest comparison that I would give to him is Eli Manning, because they both have no mobility inside the pocket. And, you know, once the pressure gets to him, it seems like they panic. So I think he's got an upside, but it would scare me in today's NFL that he's not mobile enough to improvise on his own. Daniel Jones, I don't know, you know, why he's getting so much publicity now. And there's talk of him going, you know, top 15. You know, to me, he is a, you know, his ceiling to me is a backup NFL quarterback with, you know, a potential to be a, you know, a plug-in starter every once in a while. He's not a franchise quarterback. I don't think he has the traits. I don't think he has the arm strength. And when you talk about the other guys in the mix for a possible first round, Drew Locke out of Missouri and our friend No Label, who's a Missouri alum on the board, he'll tell you that, you know, Drew Locke was good at times against inferior opponents. And whenever he'd play in a big game, he looked like he was, you know, one of the worst quarterbacks in the country. So, you know, as much arm strength as they say he has, it's going to take a lot for him to be able to put it together and actually develop into a decent NFL quarterback. You mentioned Will Greer, who, you know, is, I guess, a borderline, you know, second, third round pick right now in most people's eyes. And, you know, I do think that he is, to me, he is one of the funnest quarterbacks to watch in college. I don't know how that's going to translate to the NFL. A lot of the scouting reports I've read on him seem to be pretty much in line that he, you know, he's good or was good in the West Virginia system where he could read and react in 2-3 seconds with his guys open. But once that broke down, he was lost, and the decision making was not good. And he's a guy who went to the Senior Bowl this year, which is, you know, a place where a lot of these guys, you know, make a statement and improve their draft stock. And he really struggled. So I think that's going to hurt him, you know, going forward too. So. Yeah, overall, I think the quarterbacks this year are really, really subpar. The only one, there's two guys who I would consider maybe first-round picks, and that's Murray and Haskins. And I think we're going to get a situation where we see probably four guys go in the first round, and it's going to be a mistake.
Yeah. And, you know, it's I see where Drew Locken, for example, is projected, and I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You can see it too, right? We'll get to that later.
Yeah.
let's talk about trades, because when we do our mock draft later, we don't account for trades, and because we can't. Like, it's just going to get too complicated, but... But we know that certain teams are going to try to trade out of the draft pick, or they're either going to try to trade up into a pick, or they're going to try to trade down or trade out so that they don't have to worry about that position because it doesn't really line up with where they want to draft or who they want to draft. Because, you know, teams' needs are different and what have you. So which teams do you think would have really good potential for trading up or trading away or trading the draft pick in one form or another?
Well, you know, first thing that comes to my mind is the Jets at number 3. And they've made it known publicly that they want to move out of their pick and recoup some of the picks that they used last year to move up and get Sam Darnold, especially when you consider this year that, you know, by all accounts, the second and third round is going to be rich with guys who have potential to be NFL Pro Bowlers slash, you know, consistent starters, and God knows that the Jets need as much of that as they can. So they sit in the prime spot at number 3, because once you know, if Kyler Murray goes number 1, the Jets are sitting there right before the Raiders, who might look at a quarterback as well. So they're waiting for a team to jump up and try to grab their pick. And the one team, I guess, that you've been hearing the past day or so who might be a partner and want to move up and do that for a quarterback is the Washington Redskins. I know there's a story that came out before that said Daniel Snyder has taken over the draft preparation from the GM and the scouts, and he wants to be responsible for the first round pick. So,
oh, no.
And I think the last time that happened was the RG3 trade, where he basically mortgaged the entire draft to move up and grab him, which as a Jets fan, I would love. I'd love for the Redskins to jump up from 15 to 3 and give up as, you know, as many picks as they could to get up there. But You know, it all depends. Does Murray go number one? If so, you know, the premium for the secondary guys like Haskins and Jones and Locke, you know, that gets, you know, that spices things up and does lend to the idea that a team is going to try to trade up and grab their guy. If he doesn't go number one, it might, you know, you're going to have another team who loves Kyler Murray. And the question is how far do they want to jump up and grab him? Because if the Cardinals don't draft him at number one, I don't see him getting past the Raiders at number four. And in that case, I mean, the Raiders might be the ones who want to flip-flop with the Jets just to make sure nobody else trades into that spot. So I think that's where the impetus of all the trades of the draft is going to start at number three with the Jets. After that, I think it's a crapshoot. You have, you know, teams like the Packers who own two first-round picks who could always package up that second one and pick number 12 that they have and try to move up if they truly do like a player, you know, strong, if they feel strongly enough about a player, they could do that. You know, I was just watching the NFL Network before, and Daniel Jeremiah was speaking, and he did say after, you know, the first couple picks, he doesn't anticipate a lot of trades. What he's mostly thinking about in terms of trades is probably towards the end of the first round where, you know, there's going to be teams who want to trade out of the first round and stockpile more of those second and third round picks to, I guess, get more bang for your buck. So we'll see. You know, there's been years recently where there's been a lot of talk about trades and none of them materialized. And you always get that one or, you know, that one year or, you know, that crazy year when you see four or five trades really shape the way a draft looks. So it could go either way. But I would say that, you know, the Jets at pick number three is where it starts and where the, you know, the fun's going to be and whether there's a big game-changing trade or not in the draft.
Yeah, and it's very interesting that you note that almost all of it's going to be driven by where Murray gets selected. So that is a very interesting viewpoint. And
you know, all indications are that he's going to go number one. Mm-hmm. I'll believe it when I see it, but but yeah, I mean, if he doesn't, you figure he doesn't get past the Raiders at four.
Right. Okay. But would you consider, is it possible that a team may trade with the Cardinals for the number one pick? No, I mean, it would just assume that they wind up coming to their senses and not drafting Murray. Is it possible that a team could trade for the number one from the Cardinals and then get, like, I don't know, like three picks back or something like that?
I would think that the only team that would probably be able to or have the motivation to trade with the Cardinals for number one is the Raiders, because the Raiders have three first-round picks. They don't seem to be sold on Derek Carr. You know, publicly they said they are, but, you know, we know the way that John Gruden works. You know, he's always looking for the next big thing, a quarterback that he can mold. And so they have the ammo and probably the desire to get up to number one. If the Cardinals don't take Murray, I think it's going to be a long shot. I think the Cardinals will stay there and either take Murray or the best defensive player that they have on their board, depending on whether they could trade Rosen or not. But if there's one team that could get up there, it would have to be the Oakland Raiders.
I can see that so much. The Raiders have made some Mongo moves lately.
Yep, you ain't kidding.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into the position depth for this draft, and we'll go by each position group. We'll start with running backs. And maybe not a lot to say about the running backs, but I'll give it to you for your thoughts on this year's group. And it includes some notable names. I mean, Bryce Love was a Heisman contender for a couple years, but he has not looked good recently. No. I think he's hurt pretty badly. Justice Hill, he was with Oklahoma, and then Josh Jacobs with Bama, among others. So let's hear about the running backs, Ron.
Yeah, I think the consensus this year is that Josh Jacobs is probably the best running back in the draft. And he's probably going to go. I know there's been talk that the Raiders love him for one of their picks, you know, in the later half of the first round. But he did, you know, he did not start a lot for Alabama in his career there. So I guess the feeling is that he has the fresher body and the fresher legs coming into the NFL. And, you know, down the stretch last year, he did really pop in a lot of those big games, especially the playoffs. So I could see where you know, he would be considered the you know, the top running back prospect. After him, there's, you know, there's really probably 8 or 10 guys who are on the same level who will probably get drafted anywhere between the second and fourth round, who can all contribute. Like you said, Justice Hill, Miles Sanders from Penn State, you know, one of my favorite players the past couple of years in college football, David Montgomery from Iowa State, who really played a huge part in turning around that program to making them, you know, a legit bowl team the past 2 years. And I guess the knock on him might be that, you know, he had to carry so many times that maybe he's coming into the league with a little too much tread on his tires. But he's going to be in that group. Darnell Henderson from Memphis, you know, is in that group. So you're going to see a run of running backs probably in the second or fourth round. And all guys who will probably be complimentary backs who might get a chance to start at some point. And as always with the running backs, you know, every year it seems like there's a couple guys who fall through the cracks who either end up getting drafted later in the draft or undrafted free agents, and they make a bigger impact than the guys who go early on. I mean, last year you saw it with Philip Lindsay in Denver. We've seen it with Kareem Hunt, who was a sixth round pick. So I think that's the thinking in a lot of the NFL is no one's, unless you get a guaranteed game changer like Saquon Barkley was last year, you're going to see a lot of these running backs, regardless of how talented they are, you know, go in the later rounds of the draft, and you'll have the same production as a first or second round pick.
Yeah, and I know that in recent years, the running backs have definitely gone around that range, like the second round through the fourth round. So the play is often for value. So it's a good call. And if you remember, the Steelers had drafted James Conner. I don't remember if that was a second round or even a first round pick, but he's now going to be their guy. It's kind of weird because, you know, how things worked out with Le'Veon Bell. And now he's going to be the primary running back, as far as I know. He had a very good year last year, so... Indeed, you know, teams can often find that diamond in the rough with these running back picks. So one to watch. Wide receiver, a lot of exciting players here, Ron. You know, DK Metcalf from Ole Miss, Marquise Brown from Oklahoma, Deebo Samuel from South Carolina, Hakeem Butler from Iowa State, and some others. So let's get your feel for the wide receivers.
Yeah, and this is another group, Dave, where you're going to see a bunch of guys who are probably on the same level and the same, you know, skill set that are going to go, there's going to be a run on them in the second, third round, where you'll probably see, I mean, you could see eight or nine wide receivers going the second round easily. The value, I don't think, is there this year with the wide receivers. When you look at the top guys available, they all have question marks. You know, as we know, DK Metcalf, you know, blew up the combine. You know, he has a bodybuilder's body. You know, he's 6'3", 6'4", 230 pounds, runs a 4.4 40. But when you look back at the college production, it just wasn't there. You know, he had he was always either injured or he was, you know, outshined by the other receivers on his team. So the height, weight, speed is there, but the production on tape wasn't. So that's to me, that's a red flag, going into the draft process. His teammate AJ Brown, who, you know, for the past year or so was considered the number one receiver prospect, in the class. He's kind of taken a step back because he was more of a possession receiver in the Mississippi offense. He didn't run a lot of routes. It was, the basic route tree that he ran, and, in their system, he got the majority of the balls. So I guess the thinking is that maybe his production was overinflated. But again, he's another guy who he had a pretty good combine. I would trust him more than DK Metcalf if I was drafting a receiver. But that'll, I'm not sure, the mocks that I've seen and the stuff that I've read recently has him going anywhere, from the late first to early second round. So I think someone there will get good value. Marquise Brown, the guy from Oklahoma, who's Antonio Brown's cousin, doesn't have a lot of size, has a lot of speed, is a flashy guy like Antonio Brown. Only problem with him is that he didn't have huge production in college, and he has injury concerns to the point where I was reading today that, regardless of when he gets drafted, he might have to be put on the physically unable to perform list until training camp to handle some of his injuries. So I would think that would be a red flag. So there's a bunch of these red flags that are, or these issues that are pushing these wide receivers from, the top half of the first round to the late first, early second. And a lot of good ones are going to be available. You mentioned Hakeem Butler before from Iowa State, N'Keal Harry from Arizona State. These are guys who dominated in college, but for some reason just aren't viewed as lock first round picks. So you're going to see a run, like I said, in the second round where, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 of these guys are going to go all within 15 to 20 picks. And, teams are going to get good value. They're going to get guys who in other years might be first round picks, but for some reason this year, none of them have stood out from the pack. And, it's kind of pushed the group as a whole back from the first to the second round.
Yep. And next on the skill position rankings, let's look at the tight ends. Now, usually you're not going to have as many tight ends to talk about this high in the draft, but who did you like from this group?
The two Iowa tight ends are getting the most attention, Noah Fant and T.J. Hockenson. I've seen Hockenson mocked from as high as number 7 to the Jaguars. I'm not sure if I would go that high for him. I think he's definitely a matchup problem. So, and we know in today's NFL that that those sort of hybrid tight end wide receivers are valued greatly now. And I do think he's going to go high. I would say that's his ceiling is number 7. His floor is probably 12 to the Packers. I think he's going to go somewhere in that range. Noah Fant, the other tight end from Iowa, same deal with him. He's one of those hybrid guys. He's a big guy. He's good in the red zone. So he's going to go somewhere mid first round to late first round. And really, after the two Iowa guys, you have Irv Smith from Alabama, who, there was games last year, the Alabama games last year, that I thought he was the best player on the field. But for some reason, I guess the measurables or whatnot, something on tape has him behind the Iowa guys. But I think someone's going to get a steal with Irv Smith, especially if he goes where he's projected now, which is the early second round. I think that's going to be great value for any team who can get him in that range. And really, outside of those three, it's a crapshoot with the tight ends. You know, and it's that way every year. You usually get two or three guys and the rest are, you know, drafted for either their blocking skills or, you know, some height matchups that you could utilize in the red zone. But those three guys to me are the ones that stand out and have the best shot to be first rounders this year.
All right. So staying with offense, we now move to the offensive line. We'll start with tackles and a bunch of good ones from the SEC. Jonah Williams from Alabama, Juwan Taylor from Florida, Greg Little from Ole Miss, and a bunch of others, and Andre Dillard from Washington State. And Washington State's got a pretty good number of highly touted draft picks this year. That really speaks well to their season. If you remember, Washington State had a really good year, and it's just so disappointing they couldn't win the Pac-12. Somehow they just can't beat Washington, but they did have a really good year. They're, you know, it's kind of interesting how many players they have on the board here. So let's talk about tackles for the moment, and then we'll get into guards and centers afterward.
Yeah, and to your point, Dave, I mean that, and we all, you know, laugh along with Mike Leach for how, you know, how psychotic and crazy he is, and you know, how he comes off in the press conferences, interviews, but you got to give him credit. He's built a program at Washington State, and they've, I mean, you think about, you know, 5-6 years ago, Washington State would be lucky to get one guy drafted, and you know, the past couple seasons, it's been consistent that they've had, you know, three or four guys go pretty early. So, yeah, good for Mike Leach and that program. It goes to show whatever he's doing is working. And, yeah, like you said, probably the top tackle who's going to go first is Juwan Taylor out of Florida. He'll probably go somewhere in the, you know, the 7 to 12 range. Jonah Williams. To me, you know, and watching him, I mean, he's a guy who started for Alabama since he was a freshman, played all 4 years. I think he's a can't-miss guy. You know, he played in the SEC. He dominated the SEC at tackle. And I know a lot of the evaluators, you know, now think that on the NFL level, he's going to have to kick in to the middle and play guard. I think he's a guy who can play tackle in the right system, and depending on the team he goes to, I think he will stick at tackle, and he's going to be good for a long time. To me, I think he's one of the surest guys in the draft in terms of if you draft him, you know you're going to get an immediate NFL starter and someone who's probably going to be an above average starter for a long time. And when you look back at past drafts, it's hard to say for any of the first round picks, because it really is a crapshoot depending on the situation they get drafted to and the scheme fits. So I would say he's probably the surest thing in the draft that he's going to, you know, be a consistent producer. Andre Dillard from Washington State, like we just discussed, his advanced stats for offensive linemen are actually off the charts. And we've seen his stock really rise the past couple months to the point where it's looking like he's going to be a top 15 pick, maybe a top 10 pick. So you got those guys. You have Dalton Risner from Kansas State, who has a chance to sneak into the latter half of the first round. Cody Ford, the offensive lineman from Oklahoma, who can play guard or tackle. And again, in today's NFL, that's what a lot of these teams are looking for, is that that line versatility. Depending on the need, you could slide a guy in and play guard and then move him back out and play tackle. So I think that's a big asset to have. So Cody Ford is another guy who's going to probably get picked in the first round. And after that, you know, the tackle class after probably the first five or six guys this year is a little weak. You got a lot of projects that you can work with. But Juwan Taylor is probably going to be the first guy off the board, first tackle off the board. I think it's a mistake that that Jonah Williams isn't rated higher than he is. And, you know, I would seriously consider taking him in the first five picks, but it doesn't seem like that's the way it's going to go.
Mm. Interesting. Let's now go to the remainder of the offensive line. That includes guards, and I think that includes centers. And on the list, Garrett Bradbury from North Carolina State, Chris Lindstrom from Boston College. And these are the unsung heroes of football. So, I mean, I don't remember a lot of these guys. But Eric McCoy from A&M. And there's a guy named Michael Jordan from Ohio State, Michael Dieter from Wisconsin. And that's no surprise to me. I know Wisconsin's known for good guard play. Offensive line play. So let's talk about the other offensive linemen.
Yeah. The two guys in that group who probably have the best chance to go in the first round are Garrett Bradbury, the center from NC State. Probably go somewhere in the mid to latter half of the first round. And that's a trend that we've seen probably in the past 4 or 5 years with the draft, where the center position, if you're an above average center in the draft process, your value is getting higher and higher. Seems like every year we see a center go somewhere in the mid first round, and this year I think it's going to be Garrett Bradbury. Chris Lindstrom, the guy from Boston College, who can play guard or center, another guy who's seen his stock soar the past month or so. Going from, you know, potentially a third round pick, and now there's talk that he might sneak into the to the end of the first round. You have a bunch of other guys, like you said, Eric McCoy is in that next group for the interior lineman, who's definitely won't make it past the early parts of the second round. You have Connor McGovern from Penn State, who can play center. You have Elton Jenkins, the center from Mississippi State, who I think has a real good chance to be a Pro Bowl caliber center in the NFL. And there's talk of him going anywhere from the early second round to the mid second round. There's definitely depth out there in the interior line. And you're going to see a lot of those guys in the mid second round, early third round, who will probably be asked to come in and contribute right away next year.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We know that the offensive line is a huge, huge part of the game in the NFL these days. So you always got to get some activity once you get drafted for that part of the field. Now for the draft, Ron, I feel like, and a lot of people actually feel like the defensive line is the biggest position of depth for this year's draft. And when you go to the defensive line, you are looking at some college superstars in the mix. Ed Oliver, who you talked about for years on this show, I think he played all 4 years at Houston. And then the two anchors on the Clemson defensive line, Christian Wilkins and Dexter Lawrence. I mean, there's a lot to like here, and so much potential here out of this draft class for D-line. So let's talk about D-linemen.
Yeah, but easily the best position available this year in the draft. And, right off the bat, I mean, we talked about, we watch college football week in and week out. We do the program every week. So we see these games, and you could see individual players who take over games for a long stretch of a season. And to me, last year, if you watched Alabama, and we watched Alabama week in and week out, I mean, Quinnen Williams was a guy who just dominated almost every single game of the year, throwing guys around, sack after sack. Particularly off the top of my head, at the LSU game, he was almost unblockable, to the point where it was almost embarrassing that LSU couldn't, double team him or stop him. He basically he came out of nowhere this past year and dominated college football like I haven't seen in a long time. So he's a guy who is probably the consensus top overall player on most teams' draft boards. He's a defensive lineman who can actually rush the quarterback, which is an extra special trait to have at that position. And I think what you're seeing in the NFL now is teams trying to get the next Aaron Donald. And the reason being, he's dominated the past couple of years from the interior defensive line. He's become, you know, virtually unstoppable. And that's what teams are trying to replicate and duplicate with these defensive linemen going forward. And I think Quinnen Williams is a guy who, you know, he's got the size, he's got the speed, he has the pass rushing ability. So I think he's definitely going to be at the top of the draft. Like I said, he's probably number one on most people's boards. You mentioned Ed Oliver. And Ed Oliver, you know, we've talked about him on the show dozens of times. He's been around all 4 years. You know, was a super recruit coming out of high school. He chose to stay at Houston to build that program. He dominated all 4 years. And I think it kind of got lost in the shuffle last year because he was hurt a lot. And he was playing in a new system under Major Applewhite, who, you know, turned out to be a disaster of a coach for Houston. But there's talk about him being a Heisman front runner going into last season. And I think he, you know, the injuries took a toll from him playing so much the first 3 years that, you know, towards the end of the season, he was taking some of the games off, which is fine in my opinion. And I think the only knock on him is his height. He's only, you know, 6'1", but he's another guy who is an interior defensive lineman who can get to the quarterback. And, you know, he's been special for 4 years at, you know, in college. And he's definitely a guy who, you know, for some reason at the start of the draft process this year was considered, you know, maybe a mid to late first round pick. And now you're starting to see his name pop up in the top 10, top five, which is where I think he should be. Like you said, you have the two kids from Clemson, Dexter Lawrence and Christian Wilkins. two guys who, you know, dominated on the top defense in the country. They're going to be first rounders. You have Jeffrey Simmons from Mississippi State, who, when he was healthy, he dominated the SEC almost on the level of Quinnen Williams. But, you know, he had some injuries. He's injured now. He might not be ready to start the season. I think he tore his pec or his tricep, something like that. So he's a guy who was being talked about as a potential top 10 pick who will now probably go in the latter half of the first round just because of his injuries. But, there is depth to be had at defensive line. You could get really solid players, you know, in the second and third round who might be first round picks in a weaker draft class. So definitely, in my opinion, the best position group this year. And you know, Quinnen Williams is probably the best overall player in this year's draft class, and Ed Oliver is probably a top five in my opinion.
I'm excited to see where these guys get drafted too. Like, I wonder who of these guys will get drafted first. You know, I mean, it's going to be fun to watch that. It'll be now, I guess as a Jet fan, the way you've talked about it, you must be hoping that they get Quinnen Williams with the number three, if they end up going defense, right?
You know, I normally I would say I would love an edge rusher, which they haven't had in you know, 10, 15 years. But I think Quinnen Williams is, he has the ability to be a game changer no matter what the scheme is. And really when you say an edge rusher for the Jets, it means you want someone to be able to sack the quarterback, to put pressure on the quarterback. And, in reality, it doesn't matter where that pressure is coming from. If you could get a guy like Quinnen Williams who can apply that pressure from the inside, I mean, to me, that's just as valuable. So if he's sitting there at three, and history tells me that Mike Maccagnan, the Jets general manager, will take the best player available regardless of need or position. So, yeah, I would say that he holds the best value if he's there at number three for the Jets. I'd like to see him get drafted and see what he could do in a Greg Williams defense.
Yeah, this part of the draft is probably going to be quite fascinating. In fact, the projections seem to suggest that that 7 out of the first 10 picks are going to be defensive players, specifically people on the defensive line. So not only the tackles that we've been talking about, but the defensive ends, which we now segue to. Now, defensive ends have some pretty good stars, too. You have Nick Bosa, who almost everybody thinks the Niners are going to take, and Montez Sweat from Mississippi State. Bosa was from Ohio State. Josh Allen from Kentucky, and a bunch of others. So what do you think of this defensive end class?
Yeah, there's, right after the defensive linemen, the defensive ends and edge rushers this year are, definitely right up there as the second deepest position that you can find this year. Like you said, Nick Bosa, probably going to go to the 49ers at number two, if not the Cardinals at number one. The bloodline is there with Joey Bosa. And, before he got hurt and shut things down, he was flashing a little bit more than Joey Bosa did in college. So I think the potential is there for him to be, an impact star in the league. I know he has some questionable off the field things that hopefully won't, be a distraction. I think he wrote some disparaging things on Twitter about Colin Kaepernick and, is a known MAGA guy. So I think he does have that. That might turn off some teams, but if the 49ers are comfortable taking him, I think he's, he fits a need and is probably going to be, a day one star in the league. So he heads the group. Josh Allen is probably the next guy. He will be the next guy after Nick Bosa to get taken. Basically a kid who worked himself into being a legit NFL prospect, lightly recruited out of New Jersey. He went to Kentucky and got better and better each year to the point where, he was a monster last year. I think he had 13 or 14 sacks against the SEC competition, which is extremely hard to do. And he held his own against the tackles that we talked about before, like Jonah Williams. So he's going to be top five, top six pick without a doubt. Montez Sweat is from Mississippi State, another guy, height, weight, speed freak, who had a ton of production in college. I think the knock with him or the concern with him is that he had an underlying heart condition that, he's apparently been cleared by the NFL doctors. But I think that'll push him down from, possible, top six, top seven to maybe mid first round, which is where I think the landing spot for him is. You have Rashawn Gary from Michigan, who, was a five-star recruit, top recruit in the country, who never had the production in college like he was supposed to have. So that's going to scare, some teams away. He has the ability of a top five pick, but the production of someone who would go in the third or fourth round. So I think you'll probably see him go to the latter half of round one. Could even see him slip out and go round two. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes. His teammate Chase Winovich, who is one of those guys who, he's one of those quote unquote motor guys who isn't the most athletic guy in the world, but always got to the quarterback and never quits on a play. And he worked himself from, fourth or fifth round pick to being talked about in the early second round as that edge rusher type of guy. So that'll be interesting to see where he goes. And probably the the biggest or strangest draft saga this year was Florida's Jalachi Polite, who, came out of nowhere this past year. and was a terror as an edge rusher for Florida. You know, had 11, 12 sacks. Declared for the draft, was considered by most people to be a top 10, top 15 pick. And then he showed up to the combine out of shape. He did terrible in the interviews, apparently. He had his press conference, you know, at the combine, which every prospect does, and he complained that teams were picking on him when he went through the film sessions, and really just, you know, had a public meltdown at the combine, and followed that up by coming to his pro day and not getting in shape and running a 40 time worse than a lot of the offensive linemen, and basically just nosedived his stock to the point where you've heard that a lot of teams took him off their board completely, and that he went from a top 15 pick to maybe in the third or fourth round if he's lucky. So it's probably one of the strangest stories you'll see for an NFL draft prospect, but you never know. Someone like that could get picked in third or fourth round and turn around their you know, their career and play up to their ability. But yeah, the edge group has a lot of depth and talent there this year.
Yep, but again, more opportunities for teams and the polite scenario sounds really, really wild. Like that's a really interesting backstory there, Biebs. So now linebackers is next, and I guess he wouldn't say quite as much juice there, but still pretty good group. So what do you think of the linebacker group from this year's draft?
Yeah, you got two guys this year, Dave, who are going to go probably top 15. And then after that, you have such a drop-off that you might not see another linebacker picked until the third or fourth round. That's how disparaging the talent is from the top two guys to the rest of the field. And those two guys are Devin White from LSU, the middle linebacker who, you know, you watch an LSU, any LSU game the past 2 years, I mean, he's around the ball constantly, can play sideline to sideline, super fast, has good size. He could go anywhere as high as number four to the Raiders. He won't get out of the top seven or eight picks. And you have Devin Bush from Michigan, who, you know, his stock has risen pretty fast over the past couple weeks to where he was considered maybe a 15 to 25 pick guy to recently. I've seen, you know, that the Broncos and Bengals at 10 and 11 are in love with him, and he won't get past 11. So you have those two guys at the top of the draft, and really after that, you have guys who, like I said, you might not see a linebacker pick till the third or fourth round. You have the Notre Dame guys, Tevian Conley, Drew Tranquil. You have a bunch of depth guys that you could Mack Wilson from Alabama that you can see go later in the draft, but the talent there is those two guys in the first round, and after that it's a crapshoot.
All right, let's look at from next we have cornerbacks, and I don't really have a feel for the depth of this position, but I do know that the Steelers at least have their eye on DeAndre Baker, and I'm interested to see whether they'll follow through that or try to, because they definitely need a defensive back. That I know. In fact, we could expand this to just doing the cornerbacks and safeties together. That's up to you, but I'll give you some of the names from cornerback. You mentioned Baker. Mentioned we have Greedy Williams from LSU, Brian Murphy from Washington, a bunch of others. Safeties, you're looking at Deontay Thompson from Alabama, Jonathan Abrams from Mississippi State, Taylor Rapp from Washington State, and Chauncey Gardner-Johnson from Florida. It's very interesting that Mississippi State and Florida have all these good defensive players, and I don't remember doing much in the standings.
it's really true, especially with Mississippi State, right? I mean, you have the possibility to have three or four first round picks on the defensive side, and when you think about Mississippi State, I mean, did you think that they had an all time defense or a lockdown defense? Because I don't think they did.
Did the game with LSU, right? That went like eight overtimes?
Yeah. I mean, I saw them get run over by a lot of SEC teams. It just goes to show you that that coaching plays a huge part of a group as a whole. So, you know, Alabama will always produce four or five, first round defensive guys, but they actually look like a legit defense. Same with Clemson. And that's where you get the disparity with the coaching. You have Alabama and the Clemsons of the world who produce talent, but they show it as a unit on the field. And a team like Mississippi State, and back in the day, LSU with the wide receivers, right? I mean, they had a run where LSU had a first-round wide receiver like 4 or 5 years in a row, and their offenses were shit. You know, they had Jarvis Landry, Odell Beckham. Mm-hmm. A bunch of guys after that. And the offense never put up more than 14 to 17 points a game.
Yeah.
So it just goes to show you that's why certain programs are at the top and other programs are catching up to them, right?
Right. I do want to correct the team, though. I think the overtime game I was thinking of was with Texas A&M, but still.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
But my point stands, and yours does too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, was Mississippi State, a contender this year?
No.
I don't think they were. You know,
right.
And I saw them. Like I said, I saw them get run over by a lot of SEC teams. So that just goes to show you that how bad the coaching was this year for them. But in terms of the secondary, it's kind of a weak year. With the secondary, the past, I guess, 5 to 10 years in the NFL, there's always been that cornerback prospect who, goes top five, at worst top 10. And I don't see that this year. Greedy Williams is probably, at least going into the year, was the headliner of the cornerback class. And, I still think he's probably the best cornerback this year. The knock on him is that he's reluctant to tackle. And in today's NFL, maybe that worked for Deion Sanders back in the day. It's probably not conducive to how the NFL is played now, that you have a cornerback who shies away from tackles, which Greedy Williams does. So I think that's why his stock has taken a hit, to the point where now you're seeing that Byron Murphy might get drafted ahead of him. And he's an interesting prospect because, he had the production on the field at Washington, but I believe he ran like a 4.55 40, and I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I've seen that no cornerback that's run higher than a 4.5 or 4.5 or worse has ever been drafted in the first round. So if he does, he'll break the mold. And those two guys are fighting it out for the top cornerback spot in this year's draft, and they'll probably go somewhere between the mid-first and late-first round. Like you said, DeAndre Baker from Georgia, another guy who certainly produced on the college level, but the speed wasn't there in the combine and his pro day, and there might be some knocks on him. But all three of those guys, will probably go in the first round, probably near the end of the first round. And it goes to, who knows how they're going to end up being as pros. But there's red flags for all of them. The safety position this year is, in my opinion, it's down from the previous years. But safety is such a value position in the NFL now that you're going to see guys overdrafted. Like you said, you mentioned Jonathan Abraham, the safety from Mississippi State, and Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, the safety from Florida, who in previous years or even overall, they might be in the second round range, who are going to probably slip into the end of the first round, early second round, just based on need and the way that the NFL game is played now. But overall, I would say the secondary position is probably the weakest it's been in the past 3 or 4 years.
I agree with that, because I know that, you know, we on our last maybe 3 or 4 shows, we were talking about how, oh, that we had these cornerbacks and these other defensive backs, these safeties, and just reading it, it didn't seem like we had the same kind of juice. So, I'm with you on that. Okay, so Ron, to close, you mentioned a bunch of them already, but are there any other possible sleeper picks we should be looking out for?
I'll give you running back, and like I mentioned, you know, running backs, you're going to get value, you know, in a running back picked from anywhere, you know, between the 3rd and 7th round, depending on the, you know, the usage and the team that they go to. But Benny Snell, the running back from Kentucky, who, you know, carried Kentucky the past 2 or 3 years on offense, I could definitely see him being picked in the 3rd or 4th round and ending up being a legit NFL starter. And other skill position, wide receiver Andy Isabella from UMass, just put up huge numbers in college. He had great measurables at the combine and his pro day, ran faster than he was expected. I honestly think he gets a knock because of the competition that he played against at UMass, but he's a guy who I think could, who could get drafted lower than maybe he should and end up being a big time NFL producer. I mean, he's the prototypical Patriot wide receiver. If they got him, even at the end of the first round, right? He's a small white wide receiver who's fast.
You beat me.
Let's be honest. You put him on the Patriots, and he's probably a Pro Bowler next year. So I think he has a chance to make an impact. And I think at quarterback, I do think that Jarrett Stidham, the Auburn quarterback, I think he's a kid who, you know, coming out of high school, he was a 5-star recruit, went to,
was it Baylor?
He went to Baylor. Yeah. Went to Baylor and transferred out of there, after the whole shit went down there, and really went to a system that he didn't fit in Auburn. He's a kid who probably won't play for a few years, but if he goes to the right team and really finds a fit in a system that he could play in, I could see him, being one of those, those lifelong Ryan Fitzpatrick types who, you know, is a backup who always gets the chance to start somewhere and make a name for himself. I think he's been undervalued in this draft process, and, you know, depending on the team he goes to, I think it'll be interesting to see what team picks him up and if he can make an impact somewhere down the road.
That's a good call. I hadn't even thought about that, about him in there. And he's gonna be drafted. So that'll be interesting. So now it is time for our mock draft, and we'll go through the first dozen picks. And Ron, if you want to do more than 12, we'll entertain some additional picks from your end. Sure. We'll each project who we think these teams will pick. And we'll begin with the first overall pick of the draft. That is the Cardinals, number one. And the big question, will they take Kyler Murray? That's going to decide a lot of the rest of this mock. So, Ron, you have the floor.
I think they're going to take Kyler Murray. And I think it's a mistake. And, you know, I mentioned it on the board today. If they take Kyler Murray without trading Josh Rosen, to me, it's one of the biggest blunders, you know, in recent memory when it comes to the draft, because A, you're killing Josh Rosen's trade value, because teams are going to know that you're trading him. It's not a hypothetical anymore. You have to get rid of him. And the value of Josh Rosen goes down significantly if you do not trade him prior to the draft, which By all reports, it doesn't seem like they're going to do. So they are going to keep Josh Rosen around and try to find a trade later on while also drafting Kyler Murray. And I think that is just an enormous mistake. But I think, you know, all signs are pointing to them going Kyler Murray at number one.
Oh, man. Yeah. And I agree with you. I also have the Cardinals picking Kyler Murray at number one. So this is going to be a huge brouhaha in the forthcoming part of the offseason. So watch for that.
Yep.
Number two, second overall pick. It goes to the 49ers. And, Ron, who do they have going?
Yeah, I think, you know, even though they've added edge rushers in free agency, I think they go Nick Bosa. And really they're stockpiling edge rushers in that system and trying to build that defense. So I think he's going to go number two to the 49ers.
I'm in agreement with you. It's a pretty overwhelming consensus on the Niners getting Bosa, at least as far as projection. So I'd be very surprised if they didn't get him. So, all right, up next. Yeah. Let's see. Because, like, who else would they get? Like, I'm just like, would they get Williams, I guess?
I mean, the problem with the 49ers is that they've stockpiled defensive linemen in the past four or five drafts. So there's not really a need there. But Bosa and Williams are by far, I think, the two best players in the draft. So unless they trade it out, I don't think there's a, you know, there's not a way that they could reach and grab somebody else, especially when the top of the draft is so defensive line heavy. So I think they would go best player available, and that's either Bosa or Williams, depending on their preference. But I think it's Nick Bosa.
Yeah. I don't think they'll overcomplicate it. So we can pretty much have a safe bet on that one. Number three goes to the Jets, and Ron, who do you have them picking?
Well, despite all the chatter in the past week about how much Greg Williams loves Ed Oliver and, you know, he would be the pick there, I still think that Mike Maccagnan is going to go he's going to stick to his board, and I don't see how there's any way that Ed Oliver is rated above Quinnen Williams. So I'll say Quinnen Williams is the Jets pick at number three.
And it would be a pretty good pick, even though, like you said, the need technically is that of the edge rusher. I will predict that they select Oliver, but to be honest, it could go either way. So there it is for the Jets. And
And I don't dislike the Oliver pick. I think he's going to be a really good NFL player. So I honestly I'd be happy either way as a Jet fan. I think if you're looking at Greg Williams and he really is the person who's driving the pick, I could see Ed Oliver being more of his type of guy. I mean, Ed Oliver is one of those intense, we saw him get in the coach's face at Houston at the end of the year last year because he wouldn't take off his jacket. So, you know, he's one of those fiery guys. Mm-hmm. Quinnen Williams plays like a beast, but when you see him in his interviews and his off the field stuff, I mean, he's almost like a big kid. So I could see Williams leaning towards Ed Oliver. So I don't think you're off base in that pick.
All right. So now to number four, it goes to the Raiders, and Ron, you are on the clock for them.
I will say that they will select, And the Raiders are a team who you never know what they're going to do, especially with John Gruden. I'm going to say they take Josh Allen, the edge rusher from Kentucky. I don't know why. I think he's going to be – I think with Mike Mayock as the GM, I think they're – in theory, they should stick to the board and who they have rated highest, and I think it's going to be Josh Allen.
I am going with – you know, if I knew more about Josh Allen, I would have picked him too. But my mock has Devin White, the linebacker from LSU.
Not a bad pick, I think. You know, what I've read the past couple of days is that the Raiders are probably going to go off the grid and surprise people with the fourth pick. And, you know, the chatter is that it could be Devin White. So I think it's a pretty good pick on your part.
All right, so now let's go to number five. It is the Tampa Bay Bucks pick, and Ron, you have the floor.
All right, in my draft, in my mock draft, I'll have them taking Devin White, who you had go to the Raiders. I think they have a need at linebacker, and I think this is the perfect spot for him.
With White occupied, I have the Bucks taking Montez Sweat, a defensive end from Mississippi State. So, yeah, there it is. There you go. So now let's go to number six, unless you had any thoughts on that. I love this. The team that traded Odell Beckham Jr. for a bunch of rubble is next on the clock. The New York Giants.
Can I tell you, Dave, my dream scenario tomorrow night at number six is for Roger Goodell to come up and say that the New York Giants have selected Daniel Jones, quarterback from Duke. I would probably – I think I would run out of the house and run into the street screaming like my team just won a playoff game. Because that would be the highest comedy. I don't think it'll have. I'll give Dave Gettleman a little bit more credit than he probably deserves. And in my mock, I'll have them taking Ed Oliver, the interior defensive lineman from Houston.
And that would be a solid pick because the Giants' defense has been pretty bad recently. In general. Yeah. So if they are smart enough to do that, that's a good job out of them. I will have them taking Josh Allen, the linebacker out of Kentucky. You've mentioned good things about him. And you also had him earlier in the draft for the Raiders. So I think the Giants would be a good fit here for Allen. And personally, I think my favorite would be if they took Drew Lock. Because, wait, who was the guy that you were saying that was... No, actually, you actually nailed it already. You said that the guy that... the guy from Duke was the guy that couldn't move. And I said, that would be, you compared him to Eli Manning. It's like, oh man, watch the Giants take that guy. I think that's the guy you were talking about, right?
Yeah, well, why the ties are there for, there's conspiracy theories going around about the Giants and everything. You know, some guy on Twitter from Pro Football Focus has said for the longest time that he thinks Mike Francesa is secretly got an in with John Mara and is driving some of the decisions that they've made recently. But, when you look into it further, Daniel Jones has connections to the Giants. David Cutliff was his coach at Duke, who was also Eli Manning's coach at Ole Miss and was Peyton Manning's quarterback coach at Tennessee. Daniel Jones is a volunteer at the Manning's Passing Academy camp in the summertime. From the chatter that you've heard from John Mara, David Gettleman out of the Giants, is that they have told or had a discussion with Eli after last year that they would probably be bringing in a young quarterback. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility to think that Manning has a say in who they bring in to back him up for a year. And if that's true, I think it would be Daniel Jones. I just don't know if it's at pick number six or pick number 17.
Right. Well, I am rooting for you for your.
I hope it comes true, Dave.
I hope it comes true too. Oh man! All right, so now to number seven and the Jaguars, who used to have a really good defense, and they've really lost a lot of it lately. So they have the seventh pick. Do you think they'll go defense in this one?
I think they'll go Jawan Taylor, the tackle from Florida, and try to shore up the offensive line for Nick Foles. I think they could go defense, but I think they're going to take Taylor at number seven.
All right. So I don't have him picking defense either. I'm going to have them take DK Metcalf from Ole Miss, which you outlined as being a little bit of sketchiness around the edges. But the Jags are desperate for some playmakers, so I think that this is where they'll go.
Good call. Yeah, absolutely. I could see him. If a team falls in love with him in the top 10, it would probably be the Jaguars. It's a good call.
All right, so let's go to the number eight, and thanks for that. It is the Lions, and they are on the clock, Ron.
For the Lions, Dave, I'll say that they take Montez Sweat, the edge rusher from Mississippi State.
All right, let me tackle that. I will have them select Rashawn Gary, the defensive tackle from Michigan.
Okay.
Yeah, not keep much to local. Say there, but an interesting connection. Obviously, they're going to love the pop of a Michigan guy going to a Michigan
yep.
team. So it makes sense.
Yeah, the Lions could go in a million different directions, Dave. Because as we know from last year, they have a ton of holes, and really, I mean, you throw a dart, you know, on the dartboard, and you could pick out a position of need for them.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. They have got, there's just like, they could pick literally anybody and it would help, it would improve whatever they've got now.
Yeah. So yeah, you're right.
All right. So number 9 is the Bills. And this one is also an unpredictable one to select because I don't know what the Bills are going to do, honestly. So who do you think they're going to pick at number 9?
Yeah. This is another one, too, where I'm there with you. I'm not sure who. They would go to or what position that they're looking at. They did do a good job in free agency this year, making sure that there's not one glaring position in need that they have to reach for. So I'll say for the Bills, I'll give them DK Metcalf, the wide receiver from Ole Miss. We know that the Bills need help for Josh Allen, and they could always use someone to stretch the field for him to throw to, so I'll give him DK Metcalf.
And I think it would be a good call because, you know, you want a big, tall guy to catch passes from Josh Allen, the other Josh Allen, the quarterback from Wyoming. And it's probably the best fit. You know, Allen is far from accurate, but a big, tall dude like him would be a good call. Yeah, I like the call. So let me give you mine. I have the Bills taking Jonah Williams, tackle from Bama.
I like that. I like that call. Probably where he should go. And you know, he definitely deserves to be more in the top 10 range than what I've seen so far. So it's a good call.
Yeah. And hopefully the Bills, I know the Bills will occasionally make a good draft pick, so maybe that... Maybe this will actually happen this time.
Every once in a while.
Yeah. Okay, so number 10, here we go. So John Elway's got the pick for the Broncos at number 10. And Ron, I think we both know where this is going to go. Who do you have him picking?
Well, I think you're gonna say Drew Locke. I thought Drew Locke to the Broncos for the longest time, especially with the rumors and everything. Part of me thinks that John Elway is not dumb. Well, I can't say that. He traded for Joe Flacco. I think he's going to get a little gun shy and he won't take a quarterback at number 10. I think he'll go TJ Hockenson, the tight end from Iowa, to give Joe Flacco a target that he desperately needs there. But would I be surprised if Drew Locke is the pick there? Absolutely not.
Good stuff. I think that's a very solid like yang to the yin, if that makes to everybody else.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Pretty interesting. All right. So I will have him taking Drew Locke, but it is very conceivable that they are going to be all in on Joe Flacco.
Which is mind-numbingly idiotic, but that's another story.
Oh boy, yeah. It's funny. Like I think people were starting to compare the Magic Johnson scenario and the Lakers to John Elway. It is literally the same thing. The guy.
I agree 100%. Yeah.
It really does. Great. It's a great comparison. So sorry. You had any thoughts?
No, I agree with it. I mean, you saw them both come into their situations, flash for a little bit, and then you really saw just the inexperience and the lack of self-awareness that both had and how far the franchises are falling.
Yeah.
So, I think it's a great comparison.
Absolutely. They got lucky with Manning in a way because, you know, Manning was definitely on the downside of his career, but they got a Super Bowl out of it. So, I mean, props to them from that standpoint. But honestly, I think we both agree there was a lot of luck involved there. You know, they had just enough. Their defense was just good. Anyway, all right.
Yeah.
So let's go number 11 in the draft, and it goes to the Bengals. And Ron, who do you think they'll pick?
I am gonna say that they. I'll go out on a limb and say that the Bengals take Dwayne Haskins, the quarterback from Ohio State, local kid, Ohio State there. They have a new coach who can't possibly be enamored with Andy Dalton. I mean, who could be? So I do think, and I mean, they've stockpiled picks the past, you know, 5 or 6 years to the point where they have a lot of depth on their football team. They just have a huge hole at quarterback, and a bigger hole was at the coaching position. So, you know, I could see them moving in a new direction and taking Haskins.
Okay. And if they do, I think, well, it'll be interesting. I mean, it's fresh. I'm not big on it myself, but I can see that definitely. You know, it's kind of similar also in college to what the Phoenix Suns did in basketball, where they took another local product, DeAndre Ayton, and it worked out for him, actually. He played pretty well this year. So very sensible call there, Ron. I will select for the Bengals, on the Bengals' behalf, they will select Devin White, who in an unlikely set of circumstances, according to this mock, will have fallen all the way down to number 11. That's probably not going to happen, but if it does, I think it's a good pick for them.
I think the Bengals would run up their pick and select him if he's there at 11, because they need a linebacker in the worst way.
Yeah, absolutely. So that brings us to 12, and a very interesting decision for the Packers to make, and there are a lot of good choices that they can make here. They could have one of two tight ends from Iowa. They could have a wide receiver. They could go with defense. There's many, many choices here for the Green Bay Packers to make. So, Ron, who do you have the Packers taking at 12?
Well, I think the Packers are an interesting case because they have that second first round pick. So I think they can go for the best player available, regardless of position. And if they need to reach for a position they need later in the first round, they could do that. And I think that they will take Jonah Williams, the offensive lineman from Alabama, to protect Aaron Rodgers and be, you know, that tackle that they've needed, really, that upgraded tackle that they've needed for the past few seasons. And they could move him around, all around the line, have him play guard or tackle, and he'll be a starter for a long time.
That'd be pretty awesome, and I think it would also even set up the next Packers quarterback, because I honestly think that's going to happen sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so for me, that's a good pick, but he's already taken on my mock, so I'm for the Packers, I'll have them selecting Noah Font, the tight end from Iowa, and you know, it could be the other guy, Hawkinson, too, but either way, I think they're going to try to rebuild that offense somehow, because some of these guys have not really panned out. I mean, I'm not that surprised at this, but Jimmy Graham and the Packers is not the slam dunk we originally believed.
No, and they've needed a tight end in the worst way for the past couple of seasons, and I don't know if it was Mike McCarthy's offense. I'm pretty sure that's the driving factor of why the tight end wasn't utilized as much as it should have been, but I think with a new coach in there and a fresh perspective, I think the tight end is going to come back into prominence in the offense, and I think they're gonna grab one early in this draft. I think that's fairly certain.
Yep, I think, and as you mentioned, they have another draft pick in here somewhere, pretty recent. I don't know where.
Yeah, they have one in the 20s.
Oh,
or it's pick number 30. They have.
Yeah, they could probably end up with that tight end with either one of these picks. Maybe it really depends on what happens the rest of the way, you know. So okay, so those are my picks. Are there any other mocks that you want to go with? You know, from the early first round.
Well, I know you're a Steeler fan, Dave, so I guess, you know, I would say at pick 20, I think the Steelers, if Devin Bush isn't there at linebacker, who I think they would pounce all over, I do think they would go cornerback, and I think you're going to see either Greedy Williams or Byron Murphy go there. And Greedy Williams to me is almost too similar to Artie Burns, who they took in the first round a couple of years ago, who really hasn't panned out. Mm-hmm. In the fact that, you know, Artie Burns is another guy who, you know, was a speed guy who, and you know this better than anybody, Dave, isn't exactly the greatest tackler in the world. With the best football IQ. So I could see them going for Byron Murphy, the cornerback from Washington.
That would be cool. I they need a lot of help in the defensive backfield, and that would be get it done. Let me see where he is again. Let me look at this, my little depth thing. Yeah, that would be pretty good. Yeah. I remember the secondary of Washington being pretty decent throughout, you know, for like 3 years. Like, it's been pretty good. So
He's been a shutdown guy. The one knock on him is he, you know, doesn't have time speed that you would, you know, that you would want out of a first round cornerback. But you know, some guys play faster than they time. So he certainly has the game tape to make him a first round quarterback. I think he'd be a good pick for them.
Yeah, I like it a lot. So as we wrap it up. You know, let's position some final thoughts. This, as we mentioned, it's not going to be the flashiest draft ever, but there is a lot of very good, capable talent, especially on defense. I mean, I feel like defense is the real theme of this draft, and it should be a good time. And I'm looking forward to seeing where all these guys go. So let's get your final thoughts on the draft before we wrap it up.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right, Dave. It's a defensive-heavy draft. Kyler Murray is obviously the headliner and what happens with that first-round pick. And if things shake out the way that they could, and there's, you know, a lot of trades for those teams to move up to get quarterbacks tomorrow, I think it's going to be really interesting to watch and could end up surprising and being one of the more fun drafts that we've gotten in recent years.
Yeah, I feel like, and as you mentioned, I think the impact of many of these guys will be immediate. They won't take any time to make an impact in the NFL. So, it's an exciting time. I guess, you know, good luck to the Jets too. It seems like they haven't been. I know that's been kind of hit and miss with some of these picks, but there's a lot of potential here for them coming tomorrow. Am I right?
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, they've definitely improved the team this year. You know, it does worry me that they don't have a lot of picks in the draft this year, but I mean, that's the price you pay when you're able to move up and get a guy on the level of Sam Darnold. So, you know, I'll take it. And I do think they have the ability to find a defensive player who can make an immediate impact at number three, and I'm excited to see who it is.
All right, so with that, we say goodnight. Ron, it's been great catching up with you with the football scenarios, enjoy the draft tomorrow, and all the best to you and your family. So I'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate everything, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir. All right, that's Ron in New Jersey. That's our show tonight, and good times. I really get value his expertise. He really broke it all down. Probably better than anybody in the mainstream media could, in my opinion. I am Dave Medina, and we hope you enjoyed this program. We are on the web at ditcow.com. We're also on Twitter at www.ditcow. Wait, we're at ditcow on Twitter. Enjoy the draft, everybody. Have a great weekend. Enjoy Avengers. Oh, I forgot about that. Avengers Endgame. We'll see you next time.